Certainly an honor and a privilege to be before you this morning. I do have one little housekeeping note. It is October next month. I don't know, the weather does not feel like it, so I've got some topics. Drew said something the other night at his lesson. He said, man, we've done so many complicated studies. Kind of wanted to do something simple on his lesson today. I thought, well, we probably need to. So usually once a year, we kind of pull back and just do some basic Church of Christ Doctrine 101. And so it's kind of what I planned on doing next month, so if we can kind of get the schedule filled out today, that would be awesome. For a lesson this morning, I kind of went back and looked at something that I came across, I guess it's been a couple years ago. It was called The Case for Christ. And it was kind of a historical, it was written by a lawyer actually, as he was trying to disprove the whole idea of Jesus. And there's another book called The Case for the Resurrection. And again, he was trying to disprove the whole scenario, the whole story of Jesus and the resurrection. And as it turned out, in his research, he came to the conclusion that he could not disprove it. In fact, he proved it to himself that there was just so much overwhelming evidence back from historical settings, from the scriptures themselves, that he realized and kind of converted himself in that study. So I've kind of taken this idea, and I've got the case for the one cup communion. You know, something we don't talk about much anymore. We kind of do it our way, and other people do it their way. And there's not a lot of discussion about it, really, like there was maybe 50, 60, 100 years ago. There was a lot more discussion and debate, and people were trying to figure out what side of the fence that they lived on. I don't know that we hear that much anymore. It's just kind of, you just kind of do what you do. So I wanted to open up for us this morning the case for the one cup communion. So I'm going to ask a couple questions, six of them, in fact. Number one, is the word cup singular or plural? Number two, did the early church use one cup? Number three, who are the Aquarians? Number four, what is the Holy Grail? Number five, what is the cup of blessing? And number six, does it really make a difference? And so I've kind of got this lesson divided into a couple sections, and we're going to go through and kind of look at some of the historical evidence, the scriptural evidence, and basically just kind of a common sense approach to the concept of the one cup communion as we make the case for how we observe the Lord's Supper. Before we go further, let's go to God at this time for the word. For a moment, I just want you to imagine a blank canvas. I want you to pretend like you haven't heard anything. I want you to pretend like you don't have any preconceived notions of what the communion is to be like. Imagine that you're like a child hearing it possibly for the first time, or for someone coming into contact with the gospel for the first time. Imagine there's nothing preconceived in your mind. There's no writings of Luther or Calvin. There's no paintings of Da Vinci. Get that picture out of your mind. There's no Lipscomb. There's no Ronnie Wade. Just imagine you've never heard any of these thoughts before. And I want you to listen to the words. And I want you to try to recreate this scene in your mind on a perfectly blank canvas. And I want you to tell me, what do you see? In Matthew, the 26th chapter, verse 26. And as they were eating, Jesus took bread. He blessed and broke it and gave it to the disciples and said, take, eat. This is my body. Then he took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them saying, drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the new covenant, which is shed for many for the remission of sins. But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom. So I want you to try to reconstruct that scene in your mind. Or imagine asking a child who doesn't know the story. I'm going to tell you this, and I want you to try to recreate it. I want you to try to draw it on that blank canvas. I want you to explain to me in words. What do you see as you hear the words being read? Did you see a plurality of cups? Or did you see one cup? I would say most people would say there's one cup. It says very singular. He took the cup and gave thanks and gave it to them, saying, drink from it, all of you. It seems pretty logical if we look at it and we take and strip away everything else that the religious world has tried to change or add or argue about. if we're just honest about it and just say, what do you see? I think we see a singular cup. Luke 22 and 20. Likewise, he also took the cup after supper, saying, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for you. Would you think that cup is singular, or would you think it's plural? Would you listen to that verse and see hundreds of individual cups in front of Jesus? Would you see that, or would you see a singular cup? Mark 14 and 23. Then he took the cup, and when he had given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. So again, I think it's logical. I think it's something that would be highly understood by most. If we just stripped away everything else and every belief that we wanted to have, or any preconceived notion or how we wanted to fit into this church or that church, if we just stripped all of that away, we see a picture of Jesus holding a cup. He'd given thanks. He gave the cup to the disciples and said they all drank from it. To me, it's very logical. It's very straightforward. So I got to think, well, maybe it's just a translation I'm rendering. Maybe it's too obvious. Maybe there's something more to it. So I pulled some others. This is the New English translation. And after taking the cup and giving thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. I thought, no, that doesn't change my picture. That doesn't change the painting that I've got on my blank canvas now. It sounds very logical to me. The New American Standard. And when he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, and they all drank from it. Yeah, that doesn't change my picture that I have in my mind. Well, then I went to the complete Jewish Bible, so I'll get something completely different. Also, he took a cup of wine, made the blessing, and gave it to them, and they all drank. So again, there's nothing in my mind that pulls me off of this image of Jesus having a singular cup, not a plural cup, having a single cup filled with, here it says, wine. We read elsewhere, it's the fruit of the vine. We have this cup, and he blessed it, and he gave it to the disciples, and it says they all drank from it. And so, in my mind, it's very difficult to unpaint that scene. But that's what people have done in the world. And the religious world has tried to paint this many different ways to try to prove a point. I even looked on Wikipedia, which is the world's most invalid of all resources. We don't allow kids to look on Wikipedia in school because it has no meaning. But even Wikipedia declares the Synoptic Gospels refer to Jesus sharing a cup of wine with the apostles, saying it was the covenant in his blood. Even Wikipedia recognizes the fact that there was one cup that was shared amongst the disciples. So I think if we just look from a broad picture and just read the words, it sounds very straightforward as to what happened on the night that the Lord instituted the Lord's Supper. So what about historical? Did the early church use one cup? All I can tell you is in 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, this was probably somewhere between 25 to 30 years after Jesus instituted the Lord's Supper. That is the best guess that the experts have. This was probably about in the year AD 55, 56, 57, somewhere in that ballpark. So we're in the range of 20 to 25 years after the Last Supper of Jesus Christ and his eventual crucifixion and resurrection. So I'll read it to you again, 1 Corinthians 11 and 26. For as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Verse 27. Therefore, whoever eats this bread or drinks this cup of the Lord in an unworthy manner will be guilty of the body and blood of the Lord. And finally, verse 28. But let a man examine himself, and so let him eat of the bread and drink of the cup. So again, if we just had this blank canvas in front of us and we listened to these words, what would we think? What would a normal, rational person think? Would they hear the word the cup and suddenly draw five cups? Again, that's just illogical. It doesn't make sense. And so even from a historical standpoint, the early church, it appears, used one cup. Let me read you from a man by the name of St. Augustine. This is one of the early Catholic writers. He lived in the year from 354 to 430, and he was a Catholic priest. And I don't know how corrupt the Catholic Church was by this time, but St. Augustine is one of the more prolific writers of his time. Well, anyway, he wrote a book called The Catalog of Heresies. So he was always trying to pull out these different groups that had changed religion. And there was a whole bunch of them. A lot of them would tie together like mystic religions with a little bit of Christianity, or maybe a little bit of Judaism with some Christianity, or maybe some of these Greek gods or Roman gods, those local deities, and they tie together Christianity. That's what most of it was. But this was a group of people called the Aquarians. And it says the Aquarians are so called because in the cup of the sacrament they offer water, not that which the whole church offers. But he calls out these Aquarians because they were trying to imitate the church. So when they imitated the church, they used a singular cup. They just happened to fill it with water instead of the fruit of the vine. So if you're trying to imitate something, if you're trying to make a caricature of something, you find the characteristics that are most obvious. And so they took the most obvious characteristic, which was the singular cup. They just filled it with water instead of the fruit of the vine. So it appears that one cup was in use way in the back in the early days of the church. It's a great picture right here. I hope it shows up on here. I hope it shows up well. This is a picture that was found in the catacombs of Rome. So I don't know how old this thing is, but remember, the Christians many times had to kind of go underground to worship, because if they worshiped out in the open in the Roman Empire, they could be arrested and even killed for it. So they would hide up underneath the city in what were called the catacombs. I don't know if you can see it. Can you see the one cup? And so they are sharing this one cup, this one chalice here at this agape love feast. So it appears to me that historically that there was definitely use of one cup in the early church of Christ, even through the catacombs of Rome. But what's the Holy Grail? You know, we hear about that all the time. The Holy Grail is something that has been part of the mystique and the legend of people since the time of Jesus. So from a definition, I went to history.com. It says the Grail is most commonly defined as the cup that Jesus drank from at the Last Supper and that Joseph of Arimathea used to collect Jesus' blood when he was crucified. Now, I'll be honest, I didn't know that last part. As far as part of the legend about Joseph of Arimathea, I didn't know that. I've just always heard that the Holy Grail is the cup that Jesus used at the Last Supper. So it's implied that there was one cup used by Jesus at the Last Supper. So throughout all of history, it was strongly believed that Jesus used one cup at the Lord's Supper. And wars were fought over this. The Crusades were fought over this to try to find this Holy Grail, that the communion cup that Jesus actually used. Is it a singular cup or is it plural? It's a singular, it's one cup. That's what they're looking for. There was a group called the Knights of the Templar. They went looking for it. They went looking all over the world for it. Some even thought that they found it. It was a movie. A stupid movie. You probably heard of it. It's called The Search for the Holy Grail. It's old Monty Python. That's what it's based on. It's based on this concept. Even to the point of this guy right here. That was one of the basic premises of the Indiana Jones movies, of one of the, I think the last one, where he was searching for this Holy Grail. So throughout history, it has been understood that there was one cup used at the Lord's Supper, and likewise in the early church. Well, it's kind of hard to argue that away. And most people in the world will agree that there was one cup used at the Last Supper. Well then, how can this point be argued? If it's something that you don't agree with, because we look around, not our own town, but throughout the world, there are so many groups that do it differently. So it has to be argued a different way. Well, it's usually this question right here: what is a cup? What defines a cup? Since the evidence is so overwhelming of the Lord's use of one cup at the Last Supper, opponents of this one cup belief had to find another argument. And typically what it is, as best I can tell, typically involves, it's kind of convoluted usually, discussion of what a cup is. Is a cup, or does a cup refer to the contents? And they get in these parts of speech, and they get in these things called metonymy, and it gets very, very confusing to sometimes follow the logic when I just think back to that blank canvas, when we tear everything else away. and we pull all this other argument and thoughts and implications. Jesus had a cup of the fruit of the vine, and he took it, and he blessed it, and he gave it to the disciples and said, drink ye all from it. And to me, it's so simple, but it's so easy to get it twisted up. Some will attempt to suggest that the cup refers only to its contents. And so I would say most Church of Christ that believe in individual cups probably will use some form of an argument based off of this, that as long as it starts as fruit of the vine, that's all that matters. The number of drinking vessels doesn't matter. A drinking vessel is not a cup. And then all of a sudden, that's where my mind starts hurting. And so that's basically the idea. And so the argument is rather different. But again, I just want you to think. Think back to our blank canvas. What did you see? Did you see Jesus with one cup, or did you see him with multiple cups? What did you see? And I think it's pretty obvious that we saw Jesus with the one cup handing it to the disciples. Now, there's a lot of discussion over the years, and a lot of good men, a lot of good people who had the right concepts, the right ideas about a lot of things. They were sincere, but they just could not get over the use of one cup. There's names like J.G. Thomas, 1894, C.E. Hope, 1911, G.C. Brewer, 1915. And I pulled all of these off of one of the Ronnie Wade sermons. It's called The Pattern for Communication, or The Pattern for Communion. It's one of the Let the Bible Speak lessons that is on our website. There's a lot of people that discussed it and argued it back and forth. And like I said, we don't hear much of that anymore today. It seems that most people have kind of decided where they are and they're okay with it. But this is really where the individual cups, as far as the Church of Christ, blew up in about the last 100 years or so. And there were splits made in congregations. And some decided to go individual cups, and some did not. And it's just really changed over the years. But again, I always think, well, what did Jesus do? How was it done? And it's our job to try to recreate that as best as possible. Going back to history, it appears that there was one cup. And that leads us to, finally, the symbolism. Is there any symbolism to the concept of one cup? Is there any symbolism to the concept of one loaf? Well, 1 Corinthians 10 and 16 says, the cup of blessing which we bless, is it not the communion of the blood of Christ? The bread which we break, is it not the communion of the body of Christ? What's the cup of blessing? Because again, that sounds like a title. That sounds like a singular cup. It sounds like it has meaning. Is there any meaning to this concept of the cup of blessing? Well, according to Gill's exposition, this cup of blessing, it says the meaning, the cup of wine used in the Lord's Supper. That's what it's referring to. But it has more meaning than that. This cup is also called an allusion to the cup of wine used at common meals or at the Passover among the Jews, which they used to take and bless God with and give him thanks for their mercies, and was commonly called the cup of blessing. So I think what the Apostle Paul in his writing is doing, he's referring back to this cup of blessings that the Jews used at their Passover, which was one particular cup. It was a singular cup. I believe there's symbolism to this. Now, I'll be honest, I get kind of sketchy when we start talking about symbolism, because I don't ever want to put meaning into something that doesn't deserve it. But I tell you what, over the last couple months, have we not seen how much symbolic nature comes from the Old Covenant and has been brought into the New Covenant? I mean, there is just so much as far as feast days and the different items in the tabernacle. They are brought forth so many times into the New Testament. So when I read Paul say, this cup of blessing which we bless, he is obviously making a connection to what was something that was known of the Jewish people. So is it important about symbolism? I should think so. Ephesians 4, verses 4 through 6. There's one body and one spirit. Just as you were called in one hope of your calling, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. I personally believe pretty strongly in the symbolism of one. I believe in the symbolism of the one loaf, representing the body of Jesus. I represent very strongly in the symbolism of one cup, representing the one covenant. This new covenant that we're under, it's not the law of Moses, it's the covenant of Christ that we're filled with the fruit of the vine. I believe strongly in the symbolism of one. Now, some people have taken that, and you may have seen this recently. I didn't pay attention to it, but I know the Queen just died, and they had the big funeral, and they're part of the Anglican Church, which is a fancy way of saying the Church of England. Well, the Church of England, as well as others, has a process for their communion. It's called intention. And that's something that's kind of starting to make a comeback, which is kind of even further blurring the symbolism of the Lord's Supper. What intention is they will take the cup, one cup with the wine or the fruit of the vine, then they will take the loaf and dip it into the wine and then give it to the people. So it's kind of like a combination of individual cups with the one cup. They just don't pass the cup around. The loaf is dipped into it. It's called intention, which is something that started probably in the 300-400s back in the Catholic Church. But it's kind of seems to be making a little bit of some inroads. It's kind of a popular way for congregations to observe the communion. Well, now we've really blurred up the lines of symbolism. I believe strongly, I'll say it again, I believe in the symbolism of the one loaf representing the body of Jesus Christ. I believe in the symbolism of the one cup representing the new covenant. I believe very strongly in the symbolism of the fruit of the vine representing the blood of Jesus, which was shed on the cross at Calvary on our behalf. So does it make any difference? You know, some people in the religious world, in fact, I would say most people in the religious world, will tell you no, that it really doesn't make any difference. As long as you're involved in the communion in some way, as long as you're participating, then that's all that really matters. But I just can't go that far. I think it does matter. I think symbolism does matter. I think the way we observe the Lord's Supper is important to the Lord, and I think He set it up a certain way, and it's not our place to change it. It's not our place to try to manipulate it or skirt around the issue to observe it as we want to. I think it does make a difference. And so I hope the Lord is extremely merciful on the question of communion. I do. I hope the Lord is extremely lenient and merciful when it comes that day of judgment. I do, because there's a lot of good people out there that I think are observing it incorrectly. I really do. But I think they're observing it with a good heart. I think they're doing what they think is right. But I just don't think it's what the Bible teaches us. But I hope the Lord is extremely, extremely lenient and merciful. But for me, I'm not willing to take that chance, because I do believe it makes a difference. I believe it does make a difference the way we observe the Lord's Supper and the meaning that it has behind it. So how did I do on my questions? Is the word cup singular or plural? It sure seems to be singular in its use in the New Testament. Did the early church use one cup? Yes. Even 25, 30 years later, as Paul wrote to the Corinthians, the message was exactly the same as it had been delivered unto him by the Lord. Number three, who were the Aquarians? That was an early group, an early heretic group that still used a singular cup. They just filled it with water, hence the name aqua, filled it with water instead of fruit of the vine. But the concept of the one cup was still there. Number four, what's the Holy Grail? That is the cup in tradition that was the cup used by the Lord at the Last Supper. And apparently, I didn't realize about collected blood of Jesus by Joseph of Arimathea. That part I've never heard. Number five, what's the cup of blessing? That is an actual cup that was used in the Jewish Passover service that Paul made reference to in relation to the communion. He said, this cup of blessing which we bless. And a lot of people think it was that actual cup that was used, that Jesus took out of the Passover when it was over and used that cup for his Last Supper. That I don't know. And number six, does it really make a difference? And I believe yes. I believe it does. And that's why we need to be very secure on the things that we believe, because our opinion is not going to be shared by most folks in the religious world. So in conclusion, it's common today, and I'm going to use kind of a legal phrase here, to use inference to the best explanation. Inference to the best explanation to determine validity of an event. In other words, what's the most logical explanation of the series of events? What's the most logical explanation? Because usually the most logical explanation is true. If it walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. That's what that means. It's inference to the best explanation. And in the words of Judge Judy, if it doesn't make sense, then it's probably not true. So So I want you to think about what old Judge Judy says here and what logic tells us. What's the most logical explanation of the use of one cup at the Lord's Supper? Think about the blank canvas that you painted in your mind when we read those words. Think about the historical facts that we've talked about this morning. And just think about good old common sense. What is the best inference, or the inference to the best explanation? And I think that Jesus used one cup at the Lord's Supper, and that was the intended design. And the Apostle Paul reinforced that intended design when he wrote to the Corinthians. And when we read, "This do, as often as you drink it, in remembrance of me," there was a purpose for it. And we need to remember that purpose and make sure that we are partaking of the Lord's Supper in the correct way. And that concludes my case for the one cup. We never have to close without having a song invitation. We never know the hearts and minds of those that are here at this time. The church can help you in any way. We stand ready to assist you at this time.